ask about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jonathan White, and he'll be answering your most important questions on nymphing the new way. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jonathan a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to the website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jonathan White about nymphing the new way. When you stay at Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize, you are only a step away from fly fishing for tarpon, permit, and bonefish. In fact, you may see permit tailing right off the deck of your cabana. At Tarpon Key Lodge, you fish the tides, not the clock, and that makes all the difference in the world. You can fish the lagoon for tarpon on the flats or the flats for permit and bonefish. It's your choice. Tarpon Key Lodge is located on a private island just 30 minutes from Placentia. You can fish with world-class guides like Charles Leslie Sr., or make it a do-it-yourself trip and take one of the kayaks out and spend the day alone. If you're looking for that Grand Slam, Tarpon Key Lodge in Belize is the place to go. Book your next adventure now. Visit tarponkey.com. That's TARPONCAYE.com. Before we introduce Jonathan, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For a drawing tonight, we'll be giving a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and look for the link under Jonathan's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Jonathan's book, Nymphing the New Way, courtesy of Merlin Unwin Books in the UK. And if you want to see about more books and publications that they publish, you can go to merlinunwin.co.uk. That's merlinunwin.co.uk. And for those of you that don't win the book tonight, Jonathan's book is available in the U.S. Through Amazon and other major book dealers. So, now here's how you win. You got to be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. Maybe a one-part question, maybe a two-part question. And it'll be something that Jonathan and I talk about during the show. Submit your answer along with your name and location in that text box on our homepage and see if you can win. So pay attention, take good notes, and we'll test your knowledge at the end of the show. Our guest tonight is Jonathan White. Jonathan started fly fishing as a 10-year-old on the River Thames in Shropshire, England, and has been completely hooked ever since. Over the last 45 years, he has fished widely in many great places around the world for trout, sea trout, and salmon, including the Western USA, Russia, Iceland, Chile, Argentina, as well as saltwater fly fishing in the Seychelles and Bahamas. His most unusual feat of fly fishing was to catch trout in the Swat Valley in northern Pakistan, which is unlikely to be repeatable in the future as this area is currently in the hands of the Taliban. Although he has fished wets, dries, and nymphs since childhood, his approach to fly fishing has changed dramatically in the last few years since he was introduced to Euro-nymphing, or French leader fishing as it is usually called in Europe. From his first outing with a Euro-nymph rig, he realized the potential these methods offer to catch both more and bigger fish. Having now used a Euro-nymphing rig to catch many hundreds of fish on both sides of the Atlantic, he knows how versatile and effective Euro-nymphing techniques can be in a very wide range of situations on rivers of many different types. Well, Jonathan, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Roger. Thank you.
Well, good to have you. And for all our listeners, be kind to Jonathan tonight. It's 2 a.m. in the U.K., and he's been willing to stay up and do this show. So we'll keep them active with lots of good questions, and hopefully you won't fall asleep on us, not Jonathan.
I will try not to. It's a pleasure to talk about fly fishing at any time of the day or night.
There you go. Well, lots of questions came in, and as we were talking before the show, Jonathan, you know, this is a popular subject, and become, you know, it's kind of maybe old hat in the UK and Europe, but the US has still got a lot to learn in this area. So let's see if we can help out our listeners and answer a few of these questions. So let's start out with, you know, what is the French leader method? We hear of Euro nymphing. What is the French leader method? Is that part of a bigger scope, or is it all one and the same?
Well, it's a good question because, you know, it can be quite difficult to pin down, and different people have different interpretations. But for me, French leader fishing is the whole family of fly fishing techniques that use ultra long, very fine tapered leaders, say, you know, from a minimum of 15 feet through to 25 feet and sometimes even longer. And these techniques include what I call short and long range indicator nymphing. So that's basically using a sighter either up and across with the leader off the water, or alternatively cast upstream with a greased sighter. But it also includes sight nymphing, where you're casting to a single identified fish that you can see and you're not using a sighter. And it also includes dry fly fishing with a French leader. So it's quite a large group of techniques. What these techniques don't involve is the use of a suspension device, and they don't involve the use of any split shot. Any weight that is used is incorporated in the dressing of the fly.
How did this method originate? I mean, have people been fishing this for the past 100 years in Europe, or is this when did it start and take place, and why?
Well, it's actually a pretty interesting story. And no, it isn't the last 100 years. It's actually dates back to the mid 1980s, and these leaders were originally developed as a means of sight fishing for incredibly shy specimen trout in the very, very clear waters in the Jura, and that's the area of eastern France closest to Switzerland. And a very talented fisherman called Jean-Pierre Guillemot, and it's got quite a you know, mouthful even in French, and so he's usually known by his nickname of Piam, is widely credited with inventing the French leader as a means of catching these very, very spooky trout. And actually, it's well worth checking out on YouTube video footage from the 1980s of PM sight fishing for trout and grayling. He was and still is an absolute magician as a fisherman. Anyway, his insight was to appreciate the advantage of using an extremely long tapered leader, which he combined with a small, lightly weighted nymph. And PM fish with a knotted tapered leader of over 16 feet in length, to which he added a tippet of about a further 9 feet, so total length of 25 feet, with a very, very fine tippet diameter, exceptionally fine, going down to 8x or about 2 pound breaking strain in the summer. And takes were detected not by the use of a sighter, but rather by watching the movement of the individual fish being targeted. In fact, in his leader, there's no sighter involved at all in the setup. And the key advantage of PM's method was twofold, really. It's to allow very, very shy fish to be fished for at range, because the extremely long leader allows both a very, very delicate presentation of the fly and a very long drag-free drifts. And his approach soon proved itself to be the method of choice for capturing some colossal wild fish in the Jura, you know, fish that were virtually uncatchable by any other means. And so effective has it proved that PM's French leader approach is now the most used sight fishing technique in France and most of continental Europe. Now, French competition fly fishermen soon recognized the potential of these leaders when combined with a sighter for blind nymphing, in other words, catching fish that are not visible to the fishermen. And after a bit of controversy in the mid-1990s surrounding permissible techniques, the FFPML, which is the regulatory body for competition fly fishing in France, set out the parameters for nymphing in competition fly fishing, which was basically, you know, single fly, no flotation devices or weights on the line. And following this ruling, the French national team focused on developing this blind nymphing technique using these ultra-long leaders and typically incorporating short lengths of colored monofil into the leader as a sighter. And on the back of that, the French national team established itself as the most successful team at the World Fly Fishing Championships in recent times. I think they won 7 gold, 7 silver, and 7 bronze medals. And this has basically led to French leader fishing establishing itself as the most used method in competitive river fly fishing over the last decade. And following on from the success of the competition anglers, the French leader method is now also the most used nymphing approach by recreational anglers in France and much of continental Europe as well.
Interesting, yeah. The and one thing I was reading in your book, I think, a question came up. Is this true fly fishing when you've got a 25-foot leader with tippet? That's almost a 30-foot cast right there with no line out. So and as we know, a lot of our fishing is probably done within that range in the nymphing world. So why would we even consider it still fly fishing?
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of people have asked that question, and developments in French leader technique have been pretty controversial, even in France. And you know, as you say, some people have questioned whether an approach that you know rarely sees more than a short length of a fly line outside the rod tip, you know, can that really be described as proper fly fishing? I think other people, particularly the aficionados of sight fishing, that they're troubled by the use of indicators. I think, you know, while fishing a French leader is certainly different, it presents challenges of its own and, you know, should in no way be dismissed as an easy option. To cast accurately an ultra-long leader is not easy, even if the casting action is a bit different to casting a conventional fly line. And certainly if you're sight fishing a nymph on a French leader, you know, that requires an ability to read what is going on under the water that, you know, makes its leading exponents really amongst the most skillful of all fly fishermen. You know, as for indicators, well, you know, there are a charmed few who are fortunate enough, you know, always to fish crystal clear rivers. But the reality for most of us is that some form of indicator is or sighter is a necessity if, you know, we're going to detect even a fraction of the times that our nymph is taken by fish. So, yep, sure, some fly fishermen, I think, are never going to settle for anything other than, you know, casting a single dry fly to a single identified rising fish. I know that there are people who are still very much of that purist persuasion, and that's a view that I think is still very much worthy of respect. But I think the majority of fishermen would nowadays tend to take a more nuanced view and accept that, you know, not all change is necessarily for the worse.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the same could be said for a lot of different things that come up in fly fishing, like, you know, articulated flies or a little propeller on the front of a streamer, you know, or using epoxy to create a lot of the saltwater flies. You know, are those really flies? So, but I guess if you want to be a purist, then you have to define what purity is, and then that's your vision of purity in fly fishing, but not necessarily everybody else's. So,
absolutely, so, yeah, and let's not forget that, you know, 100 years ago, you know, when you know, GM Skews introduced the idea of fishing an emerging nymph on the chalk streams in England, you know, there was an enormous controversy that, you know, lasted decades about, you know, whether that was something, you know, was sporting or allowable. So, you know, in fishing, I think there've been, you know, many instances of these kind of controversies.
Right. How does and I know there were some questions that came in even today on this, but regarding you know, how does the French method, the French leader, different from other things we hear? We hear Spanish, we hear Czech nymphing, you know, which all seem to fall under the Euro nymphing heading. What is French leader different than those? If so, how?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of pretty complex to distinguish the various threads, and I think, you know, there's a lot of mixing of techniques, but I think that there's still a kind of a main basic distinction that can be made between the French leader approach on one side and the Czech or Polish style on the other. You know, back in the 1970s, Polish fishermen developed a short line nymphing technique, which was incredibly effective, especially for grayling, involving fishing quite heavily weighted nymphs on a level monofill leader cast upstream, highly visible sighter built into the leader, little or no fly line extending beyond the top guide of the rod, and with the angler leading the fly downstream and setting the hook if there's any untoward movement in the leader and at the end of each drift. And that Polish technique came to wider attention through international competition fly fishing, as many of these developments do, especially when the Polish team won the world championship in 1985, and that led to the method being adopted by other Eastern European fishermen, in particular the Czechs. And in the following years, the Czechs went on to combine the Polish style with their invention of a new type of Czech nymph, basically very slim, streamlined, weighted nymphs tied on curved hooks, and, you know, very often designed to represent gamorous shrimps or scuds, as you call them in the U.S. So despite its Polish origins, you know, this method is now kind of mostly referred to simply as Czech nymphing, and that basically involves fishing at quite short range with a leader of a length that's approximately the same length as that of the rod. French leader fishing, on the other hand, involves fishing with a much longer leader, so it's possible to fish at greater range. It's possible to fish in a variety of different ways, in a variety of water types that are not suitable for Czech nymphing, so water that's quite shallow, water that's quite clear and slow moving. So I think that's the basic distinction I would make, you know, without kind of delving into, you know, Belgian, Spanish, and, you know, other other strands.
So one is more long and one is shorter, and different water conditions kind of dictate which one might be most beneficial, it sounds like.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll dig into this a bit more and see what we can discover. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as an unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, with my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick boats, I'm convinced that Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing. Visit Watermaster today and take a look at the ultimate personal flotation craft. Go to BigSkyInflatables.com. That's BigSkyInflatables.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jonathan White about nymphing the new way. If you'd like to ask Jonathan a question, just go to our homepage at AskAboutFlyFishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. So, Jonathan, I always ask my guests at this point in the show, you know, what's going on in your fly fishing world? So you just recently finished your book, which I know was a big achievement for any author, it always is, and your new book, Nymphing the New Way, French Leader Fishing for Trout. So besides your book, what else are you up to in the fly fishing world?
Well, apart from fishing as much as I can, I also spent much of my time involved in river conservation work. I'm chairman of a charitable organization called the Seven Rivers Trust, which works to protect and enhance the catchment of the River Severn, which is the UK's longest river. It basically forms the border between England and Wales for most of its length, and catchment covers 4,500 square miles, which probably doesn't sound very much by American standards, but for the UK, that's quite a big area. You know, we do a lot of work on habitat restoration, engaging with local farmers to improve farming practice that impacts water quality, and in particular at the moment, removing barriers to fish migration. And at the moment, we're working on a $25 million US dollar project called Unlocking the Severn, which is currently the largest river restoration project going on in Europe. And the aim of the project is to open up historic spawning grounds by removing weirs or putting fish passes on the big weirs on the river that can't be removed, and should be really great for migratory species such as shad and salmon. And you know, we're hoping to open up over 150 miles of spawning ground that historically was open, but you know, one way or another has got blocked over the years.
Wow, sounds like quite the project. Yeah, a lot of the efforts being made in the U.S. to reclaim those spawning grounds as well, like bringing down dams and those kinds. Do you have many? When you say weir, is a diversion for irrigation, but do you have dams there as well?
These were really put in place to permit navigation during the Industrial Revolution at the beginning of the 19th century. So opening the river up to boat traffic, so kind of goods could be moved in and out by water. So, you know, I'm sure it had a, you know, very big economic impact at the time, but it also had a huge environmental impact. And, you know, that's something that we're looking to try to mitigate.
Well, good for you, and good for fishing, that's for sure. Okay, let's jump back in here. Josh Wainwright, Louisville, Kentucky, asks, what are the requirements for a river or stream that will make this technique reasonable to you? So, yeah, we've got a lot of different kinds of streams out there, spring creeks and, you know, to riffles, and out here in the West we have a lot of that. Does it work in all kinds of water, or some better than others?
I think that it works in pretty much any water that you can wade. And I think the beauty of the French Leader approach is that you're basically able to fish different techniques with the same rig and cover both shallow and deep water. I mean, I think it really excels in broken water, you know, pocket water, riffles, where you're likely to be fishing at short range with a tight line, and the sight are held off the water. But, you know, it also works in kind of smooth, slow, shallow water, where you have the option of fishing a greased floating sighter fished upstream, you know, in order to avoid spooking fish. And also don't forget that, you know, if the water is clear enough and the light conditions are good, say on a spring creek or, you know, even on many freestone rivers in summer, sight fishing can be an absolutely, you know, deadly method for catching very spooky trout, and it's just about the most exciting form of fishing imaginable.
Yeah, definitely so. The when you're is one of the things, and we'll talk more about presentation later, but this is kind of on the top of my mind now. When we're talking about, you know, clear water, spooky trout, the fact that we don't have any line really in the water eliminates a big factor of, you know, kind of the splat of the line on the water. What about drag issues? Do you still have drag issues when you're just using the leader? Is that something you have to mend during your presentation?
Well, no, you really don't have to mend when you're fishing with a French leader. Because remember, with a French, you don't have anything tethered to the surface. You know, there isn't a suspension device. The only thing the nymph is attached to is very thin tippet. So you can really minimize drag. And I think that's really the charm of this method, and, you know, why it's, you know, become so popular. You know, most of the time, fish are feeding subsurface. They're you know, usually in that hydraulic cushion, you know, near the bottom, where, you know, the current is often flowing more slowly than it is at the surface, basically due to friction. That's where the trout are lying. That's where they're feeding. And the reason is simple. It's less effort for them, and it's where the food is. And, you know, pretty much any time of the year, insects are drifting down near the bottom. They're basically being carried along in the current in a dead drift, and the fish are eating them. And fishing a French leader is absolutely the best way yet invented of matching that dead drift. Essentially, you can make the fly travel at the speed you want by changing the angle of the leader. Most of the time, in order to get that dead drift, you're going to want to keep that sighter and leader as near vertical as possible. You know, you can speed it up with a more horizontal presentation, but usually you're going to want to have a dead drift. So it's that's, I think, the reason why this has become such a popular approach, because, you know, it is really, really effective.
Mm-hmm. The you've mentioned a couple of times, and I know we talked about this a few days ago, you said to remind you. So you've used sighter, and you've used indicator, and you used suspension device so far in our talk tonight. So do you want to clear up for us people in the U.S., you know, your terminology, and especially in conjunction with French leader method, you know, what those different terms mean?
Absolutely, and I think it's a very good point, because there are, you know, differences in terminology. You know, you say tomato, we say tomato. So, you know, when we say indicator, we mean sighter. I think very often, but correct me if I'm wrong, when in the U.S. people refer to an indicator, they're actually thinking of a suspension device, something like a thingamabobber, something that, you know, actually floats on the surface and the nymph, you know, hangs from it. That is not really, you know, the fly fishing tradition in Europe. So it's not, you know, something that, you know, kind of immediately springs to, you know, to mind when, you know, we refer to indicators. So basically, I'll try and say sighter, what I mean indicator, But I'm doing my best. Yeah.
Okay. And a cider for some those of us that you know might be new to this whole Euro nymphing technique. What is a cider? What forms can a cider take?
Okay. Well, traditionally, and this really comes from competition fly fishing. A cider has taken the form of a couple of short lengths, 6-inch lengths of bicolor monofilament built into the construction of the leader, and that's certainly the approach used by many top competition fly fishers, and now many guides and instructors as well. I have to confess that as I get a bit older, my eyesight is not improving, and I prefer something that's a bit easier to see. And as I'm not a competition fly fisherman, I'm not bound by the rules of competition fly fishing. And so there've been quite a few innovations in terms of indicators. In particular, some of the Czech manufacturers who've been responsible for a lot of developments in the area of French leader fishing, they've recently introduced a range of indicators that, for example, incorporate a number of different colored small plastic beads mounted onto a bicolor indicator. And the beads on these indicators are kind of black, orange, and yellow. They really shine on the water, and they provide very, very good visibility of takes. So, that's something that personally I find, very, very helpful, and certainly for short range, tight line nymphing, I think that works really well. For long range indicator nymphing, cider nymphing, with where one's applying grease to make the rig float. Personally, I still like a curly Q. Now that's a coiled indicator, a bit like a slinky that float on the surface. If you grease it, sits high enough on the water to be visible at long range. When a fish takes, the spring unravels, and these are really pretty highly sensitive indicators, and I think can be used to great effect when you're fishing for spooky fish. They float well enough to suspend a light nymph, and I think they work really well for longer range on slower, flatter water. Some people don't like them, but I find they work pretty well.
Okay, well we'll talk about leader construction here in a few minutes, but a couple of different innovations coming out there. We do have a few questions about rods and reels before we get into the leader and tippet area. Rick Takahashi in Colorado asked, what's the range of fly rod lengths and line weights that you recommend, and are there characteristics you feel that are important to a fly rod for this type of nymphing technique?
Very good question. I think the important point to make here is that there is a basic distinction between what's appropriate for sight fishing and what is appropriate for fishing with a sighter. Both actually should have, as far as action is concerned, what's known in Europe as a semi-parabolic action, which means that the rod should bend for approximately the top two-thirds of its length. A rod that bends for most of its length is almost certainly going to lack the power to deal with a very long leader, especially in a wind. And a tip-action rod is likely to cause a lot of breakages when hooking fish on fine tippets. If we're talking about indicator or sighter nymphing, let's take that first. The rod is held high for a lot of the time in order to keep as much line and leader clear of the water as possible. So a long rod, say of 10 foot 6, offers a clear advantage in terms of holding line off the water, staying at a distance from the fish outside the fish's cone of vision, for kind of reaching across currents, to get to the area that you want to get to. I think the other very clear advantage of a long rod is that it permits a longer casting stroke and an arc, and that's really important when you only have the leader and the weight of the fly to load the rod. The other key parameter is weight, and a light rod, for example, a 2 or 3 weight, is going to be far less tiring to use when you're holding it high than, a 5 or 6 weight. So I think, that's for indicator or sight and nymphing, it's long and it's light. So I think overall 10 foot 6 in a 2 or 3 weight is probably just about perfect. Sight nymphing, it's a bit different. There, you're really looking at a rod, I think, of, 8 foot 6 to 9 foot 6, that's probably the sweet spot, either in a 5 or 6 weight. And a rod like that is going to have the strength to deal with a long leader, and it can be used equally well for nymphing or dry fly. You're going to have the action to going to allow a fast casting movement, tight loops, and that's going to allow for the wind to be pierced, and that's really a key requirement when handling a very long leader. So rod of that type really going to be capable of casting a good length of line quickly, but yet still soft enough to hook a fish without undue force.
Okay. We did have a couple of questions, Stuart in Chicago, Frank in Denver, both asking, can I use my existing equipment? Frank has a 9.5 foot rod, and Stuart's just asking, can he use his normal gear? So it sounds like what you were saying is optimal, but can these guys make do and get started with what they have?
Well, in terms of the Stuart's rod, the 9 foot 5 weight, that sounds pretty much perfect for sight nymphing and dry fly fishing with a French leader. It's probably not ideal in the long run for indicator nymphing. But I'd say there's no reason, particularly if you're thinking of trying these methods, for the first time, to go out and buy an expensive specialist rod, prior to, casting a line for the first time. I mean, most conventional rods, they'll work perfectly well for use with a French leader. It's just that rods with certain characteristics are going to make casting and leader control that much easier, as well as decreasing the number of breakages that occur, when you're striking a fish. So I think, by all means, experiment. That's how I started. I experimented with my existing gear. But pretty soon, I saw, particularly for indicator sight and nymphing, that, a long rod really has a huge advantage. And, and it's probably, if it's something that appeals to you, it's worth making an investment. But these rods needn't be desperately expensive, though. I mean, there are some pretty reasonably, priced alternatives out there. So, you can spend a lot of money if you want to, but you don't really have to.
Right. And I understand there, and I don't know the brands off the top of my head, but I understand there's some rod makers making rods specifically for, the longer rods and a lighter weight, specifically for the French leader method. So they're getting...
Absolutely. I mean, it's interesting that now the, pretty much all of the top U.S. manufacturers have brought out, rods that are designed for this type of fishing. There are, apart from the main brands, there are other alternatives, and, they're pretty inexpensive. And, certainly there are, specialist manufacturers, particularly in Europe and Czech Republic and Spain, they're making great rods. They're not very expensive, and I'm certain they ship to the U.S. as well.
Yeah, right. So let's talk real quickly about line and the reel. We're not using much line, if any, out of the tip of the rod. So does line really, does it matter what line you use, and how does the reel play a role too? Since again, we could have a long run still, so that reel still might be important.
I think again, you know, there's this basic distinction between indicator or sighted nymphing and sight nymphing. So I think, you know, for indicator nymphing, you know, ideally you want to use a very lightweight fly line. So, I mean, I use a double two or three weight. And basically the advantage of the fine line is that reduces the incidence of sag forming during drifts. I mean, if you've got a heavier line, it tends to pull on the leader, creating a belly between the rod tip and the fly, and it's going to drag the nymph away from the desired depth, and it's going to adversely impact the drift. You know, and I think, you know, that kind of tendency towards light lines, you know, is now taken to, you know, an even more extreme degree, and there are several manufacturers now, you know, who are producing, you know, even zero weight lines. So that's kind of light line tendency is I think shows it's very clear, and it makes sense. If you're sight fishing, sight nymphing, or indeed dry fly, I think it's different. You know, there the fly line really is coming into play, and actually it's the line and the energy transfer from the line that enables you to handle that long leader. So I would always opt for a weight forward line, usually in a 4 or 5 weight. They load the rod quickly, which is, you know, a very key factor in handling such a long leader. Means you can keep the number of false casts to a minimum, and that, you know, there's a significant advantage there when you're casting to shy fish in very clear water and bright sunlight. You don't want to make too many false casts, otherwise the fish isn't still going to be there. So speed of loading the rod is really important. You can use these lines really well for both sight nymphing and dry fly, and basically those two are kind of interchangeable. I have to say I particularly like the Lee Wolf triangle taper fly lines for sight nymphing. The continuous taper in those lines really allows you to get very high line speed and tight casting loops, and gives very delicate presentations. So I think it's that's a great choice on when it comes to sight nymphing. As far as reels are concerned, I don't think the reel is super important. It's basically there to, you know, store the line, and as you say, it should have a, you know, decent drag on it in the event that one connects with a really big fish. The important thing is that it should balance with the rod. It's obviously a balanced setup is much more comfortable to fish for longer periods. Basically, I think large arbor reels, lightweight large arbor reels are a good solution. You know, the size of the spool means that line can be retrieved quickly, and the effect of memory on the fly line and the leader is minimized. I think those are the most, you know, the most popular choice for most fishermen. I mean, there is an alternative which is kind of quirky, which is quite popular in mainland Europe, you know, particularly with the competition fishermen, and that's the semi-automatic fly reel, like those that are made by Vivarelli. But you pull on a lever, and it sets in motion gears that rotate the spool, enabling line to be retrieved very quickly. And, you know, I think, you know, that people like those because they enable, you know, very rapid line retrieval. And, you know, particularly in fast water where line is on the water, can drag downstream or get tangled. And when you're playing a fish, that, you know, can be handy. I personally haven't tried them, but I know several of the top European fishermen are very keen on them.
That was when I was a teen. That was the I think it was much different then, but I had an automatic reel, and it had a little lever on it, and you just pull on the lever, and then zoom, up comes the fly line. And then later I was told, that's not professional. I had to get one that I could reel in. And now you're saying, hey, that's a popular thing in here. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
One last question before we take another break. David Lawson in Sarasota, Florida, and he put in parentheses, missing trout. Poor guy lives in Sarasota, Florida. He's got ocean around his whole state, and he's complaining about missing trout. I don't feel for him, but anyway, there's a lot of saltwater fish down there. He says, I've never heard of French nymphing, so I did an Internet search and read that in this method you quite often don't have the fly line out of the tip top and on the water. So my question is, why not just use a Tenkara rod? Seems like it'd do the same thing, but in a simplified manner, or am I missing something? So do you want to tell him what he's missing, Jonathan?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question. There are some similarities between Tenkara and the French leader approach. One could give it a try. I mean, I think I see a couple of potential drawbacks, though. First, I think it's very helpful to be able to control slack line with your left hand, assuming you're holding the rod in your right hand, as well as by moving the rod. And given that, I'm not an expert on Tenkara, but given that the leader, as I understand it, is fixed to the rod tip in Tenkara, you haven't got that option available to you. So I think there would be a bit of a compromise in terms of managing the drift and optimizing bite detection. I think the other thing, I mainly associate, Tenkara with fishing kind of small and medium-sized streams, up in the mountains in Japan for small and medium-sized trout. I'm not sure how well, a Tenkara rod, would stand up to fishing in a big river like the Colorado, for example, and the size of the trout that one can hope to connect with in those rivers. I think I'd rather have a reel with a drum and a break on it. But it could be worth a try.
When you mentioned having that your second hand to control the line, the first time I picked up a Tenkara rod and I was out in the stream, that was very awkward. I mean, after all these years of being able to control the line with my left hand, I couldn't, it was very disconcerting when I was out there. So that is it's something you have to get used to. But I think the interesting thing is, the French leader and your methods were designed to catch as many fish as possible in a short period of time, right? I mean, for competition purposes, or it was adapted for that. And the Tenkara was originally, that method was used in Japan to catch as many fish as you could to take them to the market, because that's what commercial fishermen used it for. They had to catch a lot of fish, and that was the easiest way. So kind of interesting, the similarities there. But
absolutely.
Anyway, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk about how to construct these leaders, because I know a lot of people are waiting to hear about that. So Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jonathan White about nymphing the new way. If you'd like to ask Jonathan questions, go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive it immediately, and we'll try to answer as many as we can on the show tonight. Okay, Jonathan. Now we're at the point of leader and tippet. So lots of questions here. Why don't you just run us through what a French leader is, how it's constructed, and maybe some of the differences between the different methods of construction. And that should answer a bunch of these questions that we have in a row here. So you want to take it from there?
Okay, sure. I mean, basically, French leaders differ from conventional leaders, you know, not only in terms of greater length, but also their construction. So, you know, most of the top French and European fly fishermen, you know, opt for knotted leaders comprising, you know, multiple strands of nylon of varying length and diameter. And, you know, to many British and I'm sure American fly fishermen, you know, perhaps used to shorter leaders, used to buying ready-made leaders off the shelf. Leader constructions of this type can seem rather complex and technical. And, you know, and it is certainly true that some time and effort is required to build a couple of knotted leaders that are going to be appropriate for most purposes. But I think this is an investment that's really, really worth it. These leaders offer really major advantages, both with regard to delaying the onset of drag and optimizing presentation. And, you know, furthermore, once you put these leaders together, you know, they should last a whole season. You're really only, you know, going to need to make changes to the tippet. I mean, I think, you know, I've got a, you know, I've got a leader on that I use, you know, most frequently for sight and nymphing. I mean, the base leader I made a year and a half ago, and it's still intact because at the end of it, I've got a micro ring, and I've just been, you know, changing the sighter and the tippet. And, you know, I think short of getting it hooked up in a tree, you know, it's going to last a long time. So it's worth worth making the effort. You know, in terms of, you know, different configurations, I fish with two different configurations. First of all, an indicator or sighter nymphing leader that I use for both short and long range, so for tight line and for upstream greased floating presentation. And second, I have a sight nymphing leader that I use for both sight fishing and nymph and dry fly. So I personally think that, you know, one doesn't need to overcomplicate things. You know, if one looks at fly fishing magazines in France and elsewhere in continental Europe, I mean, there's really, you know, a limitless number of, you know, possible leader constructions and, you know, pros and cons of the different formula and, you know, how those leaders behave. I think, you know, while I'm sure a lot of that, you know, that debate is, you know, very well informed and has a lot of technical merit, I don't think it needs to be that complex. I think one can, you know, one can perfectly well get by with a couple of constructs. And I personally have two. When I go fishing, I have two rods set up, one with the sighter indicator nymphing leader, and the other with my sight fishing and dry fly leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed in your book you have like four different configurations there with all the measurements and everything. So if people are interested, they should get your book, and then they can get all those configurations laid out. I noticed PMs doesn't involve a sighter in there, whereas some of the others do. Is there? Okay, so those are the sight nymphing leaders. So that explains that.
That's right. Yeah, I hope people buy the book, but I'm happy to, you know, to kind of give you the highlights as well. I mean, I think the sight fishing leader that I use, I don't use PM's formula. I use a leader that was devised by Philippe Boisson, who is one of the top nymph fishermen in France, and he, you know, he also wrote the standard work on nymph fishing in French, and he's an absolutely, you know, wonderful fisherman. So he basically has a pretty simple but very, very effective sight fishing configuration. It's pretty simple to make. It's the leader, so the butt section of the leader is 15 feet. The tippet is around 9 feet, so total 24 feet. And he has four equal sections, 36 inches each, starting at 18 pounds, then 14 pounds, then 10 pounds, then 8 pounds, so four equal sections, 36 inches each, and then a further 36 inch section of 4 pounds, and the function of that final 4 pound breaking strain strand is to create a break as the leader unfurls. And that causes the tippet to land very gently and loosely on the water. And that's kind of one of the key elements of, you know, both sight fishing a nymph and a dry fly, that basically you want to have the tippet land in a heap so that you minimize the effect of drag. So either the nymph kind of sinks vertically, or, you know, the dry fly, you know, starts a drift, you know, without any pressure from the tippet kind of dragging it in an unnatural way. So I think it's an incredibly useful leader for sight nymphing and dry fly. You know, if you're on smaller rivers, then you can shorten it a bit by decreasing the strand length maybe to 24, 26 inches. You can reduce the length of the tippet a bit. And that, you know, that's possibly also a good starting point if you're, you know, trying this technique for the first time. But I think that's an A1, you know, A1 leader. As far as the sighter or, you know, indicator nymphing configuration is concerned, the one I describe in the book is the rod high formula. Again, it's pretty long, you know, 14 and a half feet for the butt section. The tippet length depends on the water depth, obviously. You're looking at five equal sections, 30 inch each, which are phasing down respectively, 23 pounds, 18 pounds, 14 pounds, 10 pounds, and 8 pounds. And then here you do have a sighter built in. You have, you know, 2 6-inch lengths of, you know, bicolor, you know, monofill as a sighter. That's an excellent, you know, starting point as a sight or sighter indicator leader. And I really like that construction because the taper is sufficient aggressive enough to turn over the rig, you know, even when you're fishing at longer range upstream with a greased indicator. So, you know, I think these things can be, you know, you can make them really complicated, but that's a pretty good starting point, I would say, for most people.
A question came in from Bill on Nazareth. He asked if you're building your own leaders, and of course your answer is yes to that. You just talked about that. But he asked about tippet rings. Use those, and I also noticed in here you use a combination of knots, blood knots and surgeon's knots. Why the different knots, and what purpose are those?
I think just picking up that point, there is a point worth making that if you really, you know, are put off by the idea of making, you know, your own knotted tapered leaders. You know, it is now possible to buy really good ready-made ones. And, you know, I've been particularly impressed. If you look on the website of Jan Siman in the Czech Republic and, you know, Pêcheur.com in France, you know, their websites are in English. You know, they have some, you know, some really, you know, really good, you know, kind of well, you know, well-made knotted tapered leaders in different configurations. So, you know, there is that option there if, you know, if you're really kind of daunted by tying the knots. You know, as far as the knots are concerned, I think the tippet rings are an enormous, you know, blessing, and whoever invented them deserves applause from everyone. They kind of save a fantastic amount of work, and clearly, if you have one of those at the end of the butt section of the leader or at the end of the sighter, I mean, the great advantage is, you know, you can, you know, change the tippet as many times as you like, and you're not going to be shortening the leader, which is great. And these things are, you know, incredibly strong. They're incredibly light. I mean, they're so light you can even use them with dry fly, and it won't won't make your leader sink. So, you know, tippet rings are basically very, you know, very good news. In terms of the knots for making the leader, I think there's a, you know, basic distinction between the knot you use for attaching the larger diameter strands to each other. You know, so say above 8 pound breaking strain, those strands, they're really the best knot is a blood knot. You know, that knot works really well when there's not too great a difference in size between the strands that are being attached. And the most balanced knot, obviously, is, when you pass the two ends through the central loop in opposite directions. And you trim that short, and, you know, once you've moistened it and tightened it, put a thin layer of, and there's something like Loon UV knot sense, and you've got a great smooth finish, and it's going to last forever. For the thinner diameter strands, so less than less than 8 pounds and the tippet, if you're not using a micro ring, then the most useful knot is the surgeon's knot, and that's a knot that can join nylon pretty well of moderately different diameter without loss of strength, and it's also the best way of creating a dropper. And there's actually a cool variation on the surgeon's knot, where you've got a kind of bigger than normal discrepancy in the sizes of the nylon that you're joining. You can actually then, on the thinner side, you can double back the nylon, then you pass that doubled up thinner end, five times through the loop, and then that works very very well, and it's kind of an improvement on the kind of classic surgeon's knot. So I think those are the kind of two knot that I would highlight, without going into the technicalities of kind of joining the butt section to the fly line, which is right. Another story.
Yeah. Real quick, any particular brand of leader material you prefer, and or what characteristics do you look for in leader material?
I think, for the larger diameter strains, so between 25 pounds and 8 pounds, Maxima Chameleon is a very good choice. An alternative is Camofil, which comes in a camouflage color, and it's also a very good monofil. And basically for those thicker strands, you're looking for a monofil that has a good level of stiffness. It needs to be stiff enough to turn over a long tippet, and also very little memory. For the intermediate strands and the tippet, so kind of 8 pounds and breaking strain and less, there are a lot of different options. Certainly good brands that are widely used in these small diameters in Europe, you know, Rio Powerflex, Stroft, Varivas, which are all, you know, very, very, very supple, and they have low, you know, low memory. I have to say I'm less familiar with the US brands. I have to admit that, you know, I mean, obviously everything's available on the internet, these days. But it's really, you know, for the tippet, the really important thing is that the nylon should be sufficiently supple to let the nymph behave naturally under the water. And it's actually, in that regard, it's quite interesting that few of the top French fishermen use fluorocarbon as tippet material when they're nymph fishing in rivers. They prefer monofil. You know, and that, the reason for that is that even though fluorocarbon has the advantage of being, you know, almost invisible in water, its stiffness is seen as giving an unnatural movement to the fly, and therefore to, you know, to be inferior to the best monofil. So it's quite an interesting one because I think you know, there are, fluorocarbon has many, you know, many fans. I'm sure, but you know, I know that certainly for, you know, the very technical, very fine tolerance site nymphing, you know, fluorocarbon is generally not preferred in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Quick question came in on the internet. Do you grease your leader to keep the cider floating?
Yeah, I mean that absolutely kind of depends on you know, what you're doing, but under certain circumstances, yes. So if you're doing what I refer to in the book as long range indicator nymphing, so that's basically, you know, fishing with a sighter upstream, you know, typically in shallower water, you know, perhaps in the, you know, in the margins of a run, and you're kind of using the sighter as a, you know, as a kind of mini flotation device in a sense, then yeah, sure, you're gonna grease the sighter, and you're also gonna grease the leader right up to the line. When you're fishing, you know, with a tight line, then you know, up and across, then you know, you're not greasing the sighter, and the sighter isn't, or neither the sighter nor the leader are resting on the water.
Okay, we're going to just touch on flies because we're running out of time here, and I still want to talk a little bit about presentation here. But with the flies, do you use more suggestive patterns, or do you try to match the hatch as we would in other nymphing techniques? Or is it a mixture? What's your approach?
I mean, I think, you know, in nymph fishing, you're rarely in a position to identify the exact nymph the fish are taking. So using patterns that suggest a general representation of a range of possible nymphs is usually the most successful approach, and that's borne out of the fact that certain patterns, such as the pheasant tail or the gold root hare's ear, you know, which suggest a wide variety of nymphs, and they are highly effective anywhere in the world where trout are found. And, you know, it's interesting to note that fly boxes of, you know, many of the top nymph fishermen, including competition anglers who regularly fish unfamiliar water outside their home countries, can contain only a very limited number of different artificials. So rather than many different patterns, it's a question of varying the size and the weight, and I think the message is clear. And, you know, size and weight variation and achieving the right drift that are far more important than precise imitation. The exception to that rule that suggested flies work best, you know, arises in situations where, you know, you can actually see that fish are taking a specific nymph, for example, you know, hatching caddis pupae or mayfly nymphs. And, you know, at those times, you know, it clearly makes sense to switch to a pattern that does seek to imitate. And, you know, for that reason, you know, every fly box should, you know, should contain a certain number of these flies. But, I mean, you know, just to give you an example, I you know, had the, you know, great experience of fishing in France with Julien Daguillan, who, you know, people may know, won the gold medal at the World Fly Fishing Championships, the Fips-Mouche Championships, last September in Vail, Colorado. And, you know, Julien is, he's the most incredible fisherman, as well as being an extremely nice person. And he contributed a masterclass chapter to my book. But obviously, I was very, you know, very keen to kind of look inside his fly box and see, you know, what it is he's using. And probably more than 50% of the flies in his fly box are variations on a pheasant tail nymph. So, you know, in different sizes, wow, different weight, but, you know, that's, I think that tells a story.
Yeah.
He's a real champion.
Yeah. Question from the internet here. Frank in Nevada City, California says that you mentioned heavyweight flies. And so how do you weight your flies and how do you differentiate them in your box? If Julien's, 50% of them were pheasant tails and different weights and sizes, how was his box organized? How do you tell him?
Yeah. Well, his box is organized a great deal better than mine is, I have to say. But I think it is super important to be prepared to change the weight of the fly regularly in order to achieve, you know, the best possible drift. And Julien is changing his fly, you know, in every pool. You know, he's varying the weight as the depth and the speed of the current and the parameters change. Obviously, you know, how do you weight the flies? I mean, the great innovation has been the development of tungsten weights, which are extremely heavy relative to their size. The great thing is it's totally feasible to incorporate all the necessary weight into the dressing of the artificial nymph without compromising the design. And, you know, recent designs of tungsten weights, mainly again from the Czech Republic, there are single beads, double beads, tungsten bodies. So you've got all the potential to tie appropriately weighted nymphs, you know, even on small hooks. So basically I carry nymph patterns in each of a light, a medium, and a heavy. So for me, light is 1.5 millimeters. So I'm struggling in inches, but I think it's 1/16. Medium is 2 millimeters, which is probably 5/64, and heavy is 2.5, which would be a tenth of an inch. I'll also carry some, you know, unweighted nymphs as well. You know, I'd say that's what works for me fishing in Europe. You know, could be that in the US it would be worth having some heavier, you know, heavier weighted nymphs as well. Obviously, you've got some very powerful rivers out in the West, and I'm sure elsewhere. So, you know, that probably everything's bigger in America, so you probably have some heavier weights in the box as well. I think for as far as the system is concerned, I mean, I know some people have incredibly, elaborate, systems to make the weights easily identifiable. Basically, I just divide the fly box space according to fly weight. But you can do other things. You can kind of distinguish them with, you know, dressing the flies with a, you know, different color of tying silk. You know, I guess that also, sounds like a good idea. But, I just try to keep them, you know, in the right place in the fly box.
Sure. We're pretty much out of time here, but I wanted you to just touch, and since we are so short of time. As far as presentation methods, just real briefly, what do you do different in presentation outside of what we normally would think of nymphing presentations? What is different when you're doing the French leader method?
Yeah, I mean, I think it very much, you know, depends on the, you know, on the water that you're fishing. I mean, if I'm fishing a run, you know, which has shallow edges, then I, you know, I'm going to fish those first, and I will probably, you know, as we were saying a few moments ago, I'll probably float the sighter, you know, fish with fairly lightly weighted flies at first, and, you know, work from shallow to deep. You know, in an attempt, not to spook the fish, I'll progressively change the angle of entry as the water gets deeper, kind of moving from a horizontal presentation, more towards a tuck cast. In the deeper water, in the middle of the run, you know, I will then fish up and across with the sighter off the water. And, you know, at the beginning of the run, typically you have a drop-off where the current at the bottom is slow. It's kind of really good holding area, plenty of food coming in. And, you know, fishing with a tight line up and across, you know, means that you can cover that water really well by adjusting the depth of the nymphs, you know, by raising or lowering the height of the sighter. And, you know, then when I finish the middle section, I'll finish off by covering the area, you know, under the bank on the other side. If you're fishing pocket water, so kind of turbulent water broken up by, random boulders, you know, that's pretty technical. The water's of varying speed, depth, direction of current, you know, you're probably going to take a good number of casts to get a natural drift. There, I'm going to try and keep as much leader as possible off the water to ensure that as far as I can, that the current, you know, it doesn't interfere with the drift. Using a tuck cast there to alter the angle of entry can make sense. Probably fishing a single nymph. Be prepared to vary the weight of fly. You know, be prepared also to use a smaller diameter tippet as possible to get down quickly. So I think one is always being, you know, flexible and asking oneself the question, you know, how do I get the best possible drift? You've got this very, very versatile setup, this very versatile rig. It really gives you the potential to fish different water depths, different current speed. You really cover the whole river in a way that I think you would really struggle to do as effectively, you know, with other techniques.
Great, great. Well, we still have a bunch of questions that came in early and a bunch of questions that came in while we're talking, but we're just not going to get to them all tonight. And I know it's getting very late there, 3:30 in the morning, so you'd like to go to bed. So we'll wrap this thing up here. But stick with us here for a few more minutes. We're going to give away your book, Jonathan, and for the listeners, we're going to give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So stick with us. And a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and leave us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that said, "What did you think of the show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now we'll go right to giving away a few of these prizes. We have the one-year membership to the International Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the International Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org. It's fedflyfishers.org, a great organization to support in the way of conservation issues and just fly fishing in general throughout the world. If you are the lucky winner here, these are chosen from the registration database, and if you didn't register by now, it's too late for tonight's show, but make sure you do it for the next show. And if you are the winner, we'll contact you after the show to get your information so that we can get the prize out to you. So let's just get to my database here, and we'll get this random drawing going. So let's see, we have Dick Dragowitz in Illinois. I probably destroyed your name, Dick, but you know who you are. Congratulations on your membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And we'll contact you after the show via email to get that set up. Okay, so congratulations. And for the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, 1 year subscription to that, it's provided by Amato Books, if you're interested in what they've got going in the way of periodicals and books for fly fishing and other topics, go to AmatoBooks.com and check them out. So the winner for that is going to be... let's see here. Dave Steinhardt in Colorado. Dave Steinhardt. So congratulations, Dave. And or Steinert, I should say, not Steinhardt. Steinert. So congratulations on that. And again, we'll contact you after the show by email for your magazine subscription. Okay. Now, to give away Jonathan's book, and that is... Nymphing the New Way, French Leader Fishing for Trout by Jonathan White, and courtesy of Merlin Unwin Books. And like I said, you can visit their site at merlinunwin.co.uk. And, of course, Jonathan's book is available on Amazon as well, so you can go out there and pick up a copy if you don't win tonight. So let's see who's going to win this. So you... give us your answer in the on the homepage of our website. There's where you've been asking questions tonight. If you have been asking questions, that's where you put your answer, your name, your location in there. First person to get it right gets a copy of Jonathan's book. So the question is two-part. What was the nickname or commonly used name of the Frenchman who was attributed to developing the French leader technique? And how long was that first leader that he was using in feet? So that is the question, two-part question. And we'll see if we get a winner here, Jonathan. So we're waiting and checking the queue here to see if we've got a winner. Doug, this is, I don't think, right. You put in GM and 26 feet. That's not what, okay, these are maybe, misspellings of the person's name. But this one was, Dick again, who just won. He says, Pima, close, 30 feet, not close. So I'm going to keep looking for a winner here. Theo, 24 foot. No, I guess I made this pretty hard, Jonathan. So here we've got, and I know the spelling is probably, you don't know what it is, but we've got one here that says PM 25 feet. So that's pretty close to the name, don't you think, Jonathan?
I think that sounds very good to me.
Yeah. So the name is Piam, P-I-A-M, and it is 25 feet. So that goes.
Yep.
The book goes out to Roger Campbell in Cheyenne, Wyoming. So lots of rivers and streams in Cheyenne to try this method out. So congratulations, Roger. And send in that same text box, Roger, send us your address. I've got your email address, I've got your name, so I just need your shipping address so that we can get the book shipped out to you. So congratulations. That was a little tough one, but hey, we got to make them tougher nowadays. You get them too easy most of the time. So congrats on that. And, Jonathan, hey, I just want to thank you for getting up at 2 in the morning or staying up to do this show. We really appreciate your efforts on that, and it was a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for sharing all your great knowledge with us tonight.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to be on the show.
Well, great to have you. And for all our listeners, our next broadcast will be on April 19th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That interview will be with Jason Randall, and the talk will be more about nymphing. This is Mastering the Nymph. Jason fishes with fly fishing giants like George Daniel, Landon Mayer, Lefty Cray, Ed Jaworski, Ed Engel, Gary Borger, Joe Humphreys. And on the show, he's going to share all their top nymphing techniques, flies, and tactics that he learned from them. He's going to cover things from rigging flies, reading the water, casting, fighting fish. So join us and see what Jason has learned from fishing with some of these great masters. We'd like to thank the International Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Tarpon Key Lodge, Watermaster, Royal Gorge Angler for sponsoring our show tonight. And if you think you might want to sponsor one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673. That's 1-800-985-1673. Don't forget to visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com, and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.